Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, July 9th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 168. I'm your host, Austin Walker, and it is hot in New York yet again. It is so hot, in fact. Okay, so we got an email that said the HVAC in the first on floors 1, 2, and 3 is broken. It's borked. Broken. It's borked. It's fucked.
It's HVAC'd.
They HVAC'd it up.
Yep.
And I know what you're thinking. It's a 3-floor building, so they have a basement. I guess it's working in the basement, which is good because it's
actually a little musty in there.
It is.
We were down in the basement earlier. It's a little questionable.
I went into the kitchen here, and one of the someone on the social team was like looking through all the snacks with an eagle's eye, just like looking for something vulnerable and something delicious, presumably. And I was like, "Hey, what's up, Mike? Like, what are you looking for?" And he was like, "Goldfish." And I was like, "Oh yeah, I think we're out of goldfish." He's like, "Yeah, I know." And the M&Ms have all melted. And so it's like, oh.
He's having a bad day.
He got pretzels. He's fine now.
As long as he got something.
He got something in the system. Right. The idea
the M&Ms
are
melting in the office, though.
Yeah, the M&Ms are melting in the office. It's bad. It was
We've got high wax content to prevent that very situation.
Yeah.
But it's a legal amount of wax. I want to be clear. We've not broken any regulations. Scott Pruitt says it's okay. Oh, well, you know, not Scott Pruitt anymore.
Well,
Thankfully, that's pretty dope. In any case, it's the voice of Rob Zachney. Also joining us, Daniel Riendo and Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
How's everybody doing? Everybody's back from a week of on again, off again, days off. Some of us took some time off for vacation. Some of us were sick for a whole week. Rob Zachney, how you feeling, buddy?
Feeling better. Basically, I had a summer cold or flu or something that was basically like all the shitty parts of being drunk off your ass, but none of the good parts. So it was like a solid week of just living that moment where you realize, like, you know, like with a bad hangover, there's that moment where you're like, what if I never get better? What if this is just my life now?
Right.
That was my life for a solid week. So, like, every time I stood up or, like, turned my head too quickly, the room would swim for, like, a couple minutes.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and it was...
That's bad.
It was real bad. It was bad. And, you know, but I, you know, ended up having to take the whole week. But I ended my weekend in style, doing a memory test on my PC, trying to figure out why it keeps locking up. And since memory tests take a while, I decided, what the hell, why not stay up late waiting for this test to finish and watch Skybound?
Oh!
Oh, you did it!
Yeah.
How
I watched
was it?
Skybound.
Can we set up? Can you please set up Skybound for the listeners that maybe are new,
newer
were not
folks
there when we had our Skybound moment?
Yeah, this is a movie that came to my attention at least when like somehow Alex Navarro stumbled across a trailer for it, and the pitch line for this movie is, "What if suddenly the ground was gone?"
Good question.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so it's a bunch of C-tier, D-tier actors.
Good.
Like, all, like, they look like people who were turned down from, like, a high school show, or, like, a fan-made, Saved by the Bell, Bell reboot. Like, the only person you recognize in this movie is the dude from the first season of The Flash, Eddie.
Okay, sure.
Yeah,
I believe you.
Yeah, he buys it. It's tough. Spoilers for The Flash, by the way. He's the only guy you'd recognize in this. But it's a bunch of young 20-somethings on a private jet off to party, and while they're up in the air, the ground disappears. Whatever the fuck that means.
It means a great cinematic experience, presumably.
You watched that movie. Presumably you have the answer to this.
Well, they... Yeah, but they... So, the ground... To my dismay, the ground does not actually disappear.
Oh!
Like, it's on fire, right?
No, it's nukes.
Oh.
So, yeah, they can't
Spoiler
land.
Spoiler alert!
Yeah. They can't land, and at one point, a character's father's on the phone telling her, like, you must stay skybound. I repeat, stay skybound. So they do. And then... I swear to God, in most, like, the most bizarre moment in this movie is where, whatever the fuck the actor's name is, Eddie Thawne from The Flash.
Yep.
When he explains his plan to extend the flight range of this private jet by cutting off an engine to save weight, and he's
what?
Like, he brandishes a little fire axe, and he's like, this axe is steel. But the airframe is aluminum. Steel cuts aluminum.
That's classic.
So if I go out there, I can cut the engine off the plane. And then everyone's like, you're crazy. This is never
like,
going to work.
Is it like on fire?
No. They just need to cut weight so that the plane can extend its fuel its fuel range and reach
engine?
Hawaii. It's got two engines.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the fly on one engine and the plane will be, you know, several hundred pounds lighter, so it'll be good. Anyway, everyone's like, this is never going to work. Think about what you're doing. And then he gives a very lightly modified version of the Pacino speech from Any Given Sunday.
Oh, no.
To explain why he's got to do this.
Good.
He's like, right
Great.
Now, we're in hell. This plane is our tomb. But if I go out there... and cut this engine off, and we work together. With each cut, we're going to pull ourselves out of hell. And everyone's like, yeah, let's go cut that engine off.
Great.
And they do.
You know what?
And then they die and then cut to black. They didn't
that sounds,
to Hawaii.
That sounds great, honestly. Patrick, did you go to Hawaii? You look tan. You look red.
Yeah, I didn't go. I didn't touch a video game for
hell
five
yeah.
days. I just went outside. I drank too much. I didn't sleep that much. I had a good time. Beaches,
you stopped. You were able to disengage from our political chat.
I got pushed out of vacation, so I got the big stuff.
Wait,
okay.
Didn't click
beaches,
on it. But otherwise,
boats, ballads, and bars. That's the name of the Jimmy Buffett compilation collection.
Did you go?
What?
Wait. How do you know that?
I'm a parrothead.
Oh. Okay.
Wow. Harry Potter, parrothead.
A lot of things confirmed.
What are the
today.
Secrets? What other secrets do we need to know about Rob's acne?
I don't know. I feel like every day it was just
there's
a new
a
one.
New,
there's a
there's
new
a
one.
New one.
Rob was in Skybound.
Oh
my God. He okay. was the plane.
I was the plane.
Rob was
yeah, the, voice
the big
of the
boy.
Plane.
You know what? Rob the plane is an all right. I. You know what? I think in.
That's all right.
Yeah, in Pixar's Planes 2, Rob could be the plane from Skybound.
I'm good with that.
So wait, you did nothing. You did no video games. No nothing,
nothing,
Patrick.
Zero. Zilch. I brought up a PS4. I brought my Switch. They remained in a bag. I decided to just walk away. Zero interest.
Wow. Nice work.
It was good. It was good. I spent like
you know
a whole, I was 7 hours on a boat, just like floating
Fishing?
Along.
Fishing? What were you doing?
Nah, just boating. Went on a jet ski. Ah. No, it's good to know people that have money but don't have any money yourself and then just leech off of them.
That sounds great.
And then it's knowing people that know people that have more money than them, and then just like
right.
working your way up a ladder of access to things
yeah.
that you will never have in your life.
Patrick, away each
I,
cut.
I think
yeah.
you're describing being a con man. I think that's
look.
Which
I brought
is fair.
Down. I brought down a bucket of ice for people to put the beer in. I didn't bring the beer, but I brought the ice. The kids wanted to go on the jet ski. They're too young to go by themselves, so I said, "Hey, I'll take you out on this jet ski. I'm
Real.
A responsible adult."
And then
that's
hours
right.
later. When you clipped enough letters out of the magazine, you were like, I'll bring back your children if...
See, I was going somewhere else with it, which is where Patrick comes back and then just pretends to be one of the kids' dads and just, like, talented Mr. Ripley's his way into a
yep.
different person's life.
Well, I just take the jet ski to the other side of the lake and then
right.
no one knows who I am over there.
That's true. That's...
Yeah.
Jay Catsby. That's it. That's changes
with
his
K.
name with a K.
K for clapping.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. So I guess, like, you know, we can talk a little bit about video games. I guess my computer didn't break, and I was not on any jet skis. I played Hollow Knight. Hollow Knight's still good.
Yeah.
I played Six Ages. I just want to shout that out really quick. In fact, maybe this would be my early waypoint for the game, for the episode. Six Ages is the follow-up to King of Dragon Pass, that game I pitched y'all a couple of, like, a month ago now. The Glorantha, like a high fantasy, Viking kind of text-driven story strategy game thing with cool quests and stuff. Six Ages is dope as hell. I haven't
is
gotten
it
enough. Yeah, it's out. It's out on iOS. It's out now. You can play it. You can go get it and play it. It's cool. I think a PC release is coming at some point. It is so cool because it takes place in the same basic universe as King of Dragon Pass. And so there's, like, similar things. You know, it's a game about running a clan and, like, having, like, a tribe, having to deal with, like,
a good clan.
You heard me catch myself. Having to deal with, like, the different families of that tribe and try to make sure that everyone's, like, the gods are pleased and you have enough food for people, but also your neighbors, the neighboring clans aren't, like, don't hate you, and maybe doing a little bit of warfare and stealing people's cows, but also helping people against, you know, diseases or whatever. It's a really cool open-ended story-driven game. The thing I love the most about it is that as a fan of the first one, it takes place in the same world but at a different time, and your perspective on events is so different because you're not from the same culture. But some of the events, the mythological events, are the same, right? And so the example that I like to give is that in the King of Dragon Pass, there's a god named Humacht, and he's like a Viking death god. He invented the sword, which means he invented wounds, and eventually he even invented death, which is a big deal in the mythology because until then, no one could die, including the gods. But this guy was like, oh, brother Orlanth, I got your back. If you want to kill Yelm, the sun god, I got this sword for you, and now you can kill people with it. He won't just get hurt. He'll get hurt so bad he doesn't exist anymore, and that was new. That's what Humacht, the death god, brought to you. And he's like all black everything, black hair, white cross on his chest because it's like a sword cross thing. It's like metal as fuck.
Original goth, yeah.
Goth. In Six Ages, you learn about Humacht 2, and he's like a try-hard Redditor who really wants to get with one of your maternal goddesses.
Yep.
And just he's like, hey, I know you're a goddess of healing, and I think that's pretty cool, so I invented hurting people, which means you're like, well, you can heal them now, and that makes you more popular with people. And she's just like, okay, thanks, Humacht. Thank you very much, buddy. And then later he's like, I invented killing people, so now people really want to hang out with you. And it's just like so fun to be like, okay, you're from a different culture, and so your myths reflect this different vision on all these gods and goddesses and mythological events. And, like, you know, you happen to like the sun god a lot, and so you very specifically dislike the shitty people from the first game who killed your god or whose god killed your god. It's a really cool game, and seeing them mix up the kind of position of the mythology is so fun. Again, it's on iOS, and we don't have an iOS capture set up right now. I don't know how hard that would be to set up, but
you can do screen capture depending on
it. Is it pretty easy still? Okay.
There's both an official Apple like dongle that just does an HDMI out, and then there's also capture software that.
So look at that. I have to talk to somebody about whether or not a PC release is forthcoming soon or late. And if it's soon, I might want to do a stream of that and show that off. I really like it. Six Ages. But other than that, same old same for me. Anybody else have any interesting week stuff? Seems like no.
So I started playing Moon Crash as well. Ironically, Moon Crash is where my PC began to die. Truly. Yeah, like it really was the Moon Crash experience. But nevertheless, that is a difficult game to explain.
Danielle, like, pitched it to us, there were still some things you didn't quite get, or?
I never really quite figured out the overarching meta goals of these runs and how they all fit together, like, and where the simulation resets were. There's just a lot of like nuances to how the overall structure of Moon Crash works that like you go on and explain, and like once you see the game in action, they're like perfectly like legible to you. But like I heard Danielle explain this game three different times, and it wasn't until I played it that I was like, oh, so that's how the economy of this game sort of works. So that's where the resets really start to bite you.
Well, tell me where they bite me. I don't want to get bitten.
Well, there's literally a moon shark, so you might get bitten.
I don't want to deal with the moon shark.
Watch for the moon
shark. What
do you
mean there's a moon? You can't just drop in that there's a moon shark.
I mean, the game does to you, and it eats you like 100 times before you figure out how to
Candygram.
What is this? What is this? Is this a...
All right, the moon shark is literally... It's so, you know the nightmares in the first game, in the main game?
The Typhon
It's a
nightmares.
Little bit like a nightmare, only...
But it doesn't suck.
Yeah, it's way better.
Great. That's good.
It just looks kind of like that. And what it does is, if you can picture the lunar surface as if it were a calm ocean,
like the dust itself.
Yeah, the
dust.
This
is terrifying.
Oh, it's awful. And all, you hear like a little rumble, and you see like, you know, the sort of ridges of something moving on that lunar soil. And then up jumps a horrifying creature that can one-shot kill you. That's a moon shark. And it is very bad.
And it will
bad.
Hone in on your footsteps like within a second. So like, if you get stranded out in the dust, you will see the like onrushing furrow of rocks and dirt like racing towards you as this thing comes to just like wreck you. Yeah, it's eerie. But yeah, I really like it. I take back a lot of like my initial reservations.
Wow.
Thank you. I thought you might
on Waypoint Radio.
Yeah, like it's also forcing me to play Prey in really interesting ways. So like you talk a little, you know, Danielle, you've talked about this, and I think you're working on a piece that's going to touch on this as well. So I don't want to be like cribbing from the thing I literally just edited. But Morgan Yu, you could basically spec out however you wanted, and like Morgan Yu is like an unstoppable superhero. The characters in this game have like legit builds. That, like, there's shit they can do and there's shit they can't do. And another key point. As you go through the runs, the resources one character takes out of the world will not be there for the next player to go through. So, like, if you take that shotgun in the first area, that shotgun's not going to be there for the next character to go into the world.
Right.
So you really need to think about, like, okay, who's left to get off of this moon base? What do they actually need? What are they good with? And what am I safe taking? So what's gonna complement their approach, or at least my approach to this character, and what's going to like handicap it, and that really changes things.
Awesome,
it sure does.
As I work through Hollow Knight, I have to finish that before I play something else, or I have to at least get to a place where I'm saying I'm done with it. I said this on Hot Mic Mornings today, but I'm getting to a place. I like Hollow Knight a lot still, but I'm hitting some platforming sections that are pushing me pretty hard. And there have been moments where I've been like, maybe I just want like a really good let's play of this. I don't think I'm there yet. I'm going to keep pushing. I'm still enjoying it a lot. But if I do get caught up and end up watching a let's play instead, this double whammy of people telling me that Moon Crash is really good makes me want to maybe play Moon Crash.
It's awesome and it's really hard.
How does it stack up to the original – not the original Prey – to Prey 2017?
Isn't it
the outsider situation or is it a
No, I think you kind of need to know what you're doing a little bit because it is very difficult actually. Like you need to be pretty familiar with the mechanics.
What I actually meant was not – that's not the part of Death Hit. I meant the, like, does it feel like it reflects a great deal of knowledge of what the game systems are in a way that actually might be more rewarding than some of the stuff in base Prey?
Yeah, I could see people who were turned off by the last third of Prey, who thought, oh, it got a little weird at the end or it kind of dragged at the end. I could see them getting very, very, very into this. It's also – it changes all the time. Like it's a constantly evolving experience. The further you go in – and there's a sort of shell narrative. I think I may have mentioned that at one point. But you are a hacker who's going into this simulation, but he has a story too. There's kind of a story to him as well. And the further you get the more characters you open, the more characters you open. There's five total, I think, unless there's like a secret other character. Things get more difficult or certain variables will change at different times. So things like, oh, the power's out in this section of the map. So you need to go and like switch the power on basically before you can do anything else. And, you know, so on and so forth. Like, or environmental hazards will be different. So it really does change things up, and it really does sort of reward you for being clever about all of those changes. Rob, it looks like you have something.
Yeah, I mean, like a nightmarish thing that will happen in this game is you know where an escape pod is from a previous run, And so at a certain point, you're like, I'm running out of time, because the longer you're in the sim, the more corrupt it gets, the nastier enemies get, and the more there are of them. So you, like, start racing toward an escape pod. And it is a nauseating feeling when you run into that room where every other time the escape pod has been sitting there. Oh, and this time you run in.
That's good.
The escape pod's still there, and it's broken beyond repair. Like, you're standing there, like trying to poke at the controls, and it's like, yeah, power's offline. This thing's never launching.
So wait, how long does a run last for either of you?
It depends. A great deal. There is an item that is delay loop time. And so it's like costs 1,000 points or whatever. Yeah. So again, when you're going in, you create a loadout and you say, everybody has like a default loadout, but I'm always going in with a lot of extra stuff that I happen to know will be helpful for me in whatever I'm trying to accomplish in that run. Like, oh, I want to explore a lot on this run, so I'm going to get a whole bunch of these little delay times that'll actually let me be in there for longer to keep the corruption down for longer and longer. It could last you an hour. It can last you a lot longer than that. It can also last you like a ridiculously short amount of time because it's really easy to die and lose, you know, all your stuff. But you do have persistent progress, which helps. If you didn't, I think I would hate this a little bit, to be honest with you. Like, because I usually detest permadeath as a mechanic. I hate it. I honestly hate it a little bit. But the fact
how many
that
hours into the breach?
478 at this point.
Yeah, just want to make, just as a non sequitur, I know.
I know. I know. I hate that about that game, too. Don't worry.
Okay.
I love that game so much that I'm playing it despite
that. Despite that. Okay. I didn't know if that was a situation where you were like,
I fucking hate permadeath.
Where you were like, actually, this has changed my opinion on permadeath. Okay.
Hate it.
Okay.
But it's such a great little puzzle game.
Though. It is.
You know. Anyway, so, sorry. Go on.
A thing I really dig about the simulation, each run you take with a character, that character's either going to die or they're going to escape. That's basically your two outcomes. Once you've run through all the characters, the simulation resets. And basically everything goes back to a new state, and that's when everything's rearranged. And so once you sort of cycle through your available roster of characters, if you've completed everything, I presume that's the end of the game. But if not everyone has checked all their boxes, simulation is over, it resets, now you have to run all those characters through again. As long before that simulation is reset, the corruption is persistent between runs. And so if one character lingers like and is just searching everything out and takes it from like corruption level 1 up to corruption level 4 and then they make their escape, the next character in walks into corruption level 4 and it is a shit show.
That's awesome.
And so that's you've really got to cool. be like, I'm going to spend all my points arming myself to the teeth so I can survive corruption level 4.
Right.
The cool thing that changes up is a lot of immersive sims, I think, can make themselves a little boring by encouraging you to sit on your ass and like plan stuff out meticulously and overanalyze.
The most fun I ever had with the most recent – not the most recent Deus Ex, but Deus Ex Human Revolution was one where I committed to no save scumming. I was like, all right, if things go bad, I have to shoot my way out of this.
Yep.
And that turned out to be really fun. I'd already played through the game on super stealthy where I was willing to take all that sitting on my ass time. But then like – I had so much more fun playing through where, like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not just going to sit and do the optimal solution. So it sounds like this, Rob, fixes that.
Dude, there are moments where, like, you're sort of dialed in and you got your best character and you're basically playing Prey as if you're, like, in the raid or something. Right. Like, you are just fucking moving through that level.
All right.
Murdering shit. It is amazing.
It's so good.
Awesome.
Oh, it's so good. And it has all that great level design and all those nice, delicious systems on top of systems on top of systems on top of systems that you can interact with. And it's so much fun. I'm having a lot of fun right now to give you a specific example with Riley Yu, who's like Morgan Yu's cousin.
Okay.
Who directs the moon.
The fucking OC of like, oh, also they
it's
have
her
a cousin.
It's her cousin. Yeah,
good.
And like she does not think highly of Alex. She thinks Alex is a butthead.
So it's very, very good. Okay.
I'm having so much fun with her. So she's sort of like a Typhon build, I guess.
She's
so like a
the
lot of Typhon powers.
Stuff, right?
Yeah. So there's a lot of fun things to be done with turning into things, of course, which I didn't do too much of in the base game because my first run was all human. And then I played with sort of all the powers, which was really fun and really rad. But like you can turn into so many things and you can use that to do so many weird things in this game. A lot of unexpected things. So I'm having a lot of fun really just exploring sort of the limits of the systems and always being pleasantly surprised that I am allowed to do all kinds of bullshit. That's the thing I like the most about this game and what I liked the most about Prey, you know, the base game, I guess, is just that That game is so happy for you to break it. That game is just delighted when you break something or if you find a new weird thing to fuck with. It is just like, it was made with that very, very, very much so. Like, we want a certain type of player to, like, have a fucking blast with these tools and this and these toys and to just absolutely go wild.
Yeah, I remember there was a moment that I thought I got stuck, completely stuck in Prey, down in something that almost looked like it wasn't even level geometry. It was still level geometry, but it looked like it was like the type of level geometry you see through a window or through a grate to like add depth, but not actually to you're supposed to be there. And the only way I got out was I had one of those implosion grenades or implosion mines. What are those called?
Oh, the recycler?
The recycler charges. Yeah. And I had not even thought about using them as a way to move through the environment, but I used it to destroy a grate that would let me back out. And I like literally was stuck in there for 15, 20 minutes until someone on Twitter suggested using the recycler charge that way. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. Like, it's so cool that that is what managed to destroy this grate. Nothing else I would do would touch that grate. Like, no, it wasn't a grate that was meant to be, like, punched through or shot through or anything. Like, I tried a million other things, but the recycler charges totally did it. And it was, like, awesome. Yep, cool. Awesome. It's climbing my list as the two of you.
One day I would love
it.
To watch you play Moon Crash.
Awesome. So the other thing I did last week, actually, let's take a quick break and then let's maybe dig into our big topic for the week, which is a conversation that I think we probably would have had last Friday, but instead we are all resting and recovering and enjoying our times off and et cetera, handling the shop here, Danielle, as you person here, I think, last
Yeah,
last
I did a lot of writing about Moon Crash. So
you did. That's good.
It made sense.
All right, so we will be right back.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right. So last Friday, a bunch of people have asked us about this, and I feel like it's silly of us to, like, beat around the bush or, like, kick the can down the road until someone explicitly asks us, emails us a question bucket question that we pull out.
Writing Skybound 2.
That's it. We are the writing team. The writing, production, crew. Acting, filming,
editing.
Crew, editing.
Imagine who wants to try and get into Trolls 2, then why can we not get into our own cinematic universe?
So this
Skybound
2. Skybound
2
is going to be Steel.
And the whole plane's Steel, and it uses Bound 2, the Kanye West song, as its theme.
Oh, I thought this was Bound 2, like the lesbian Wachowski sisters.
Well, it's actually a crossover. It's Sky.
Oh, yeah.
Takes place in the sky.
Corky's back.
The sequel to
Corky's
the movie
back.
Bound. Corky's back.
She's a plumber, but she's also a steel worker.
Steel worker.
Who can then, cut up the engines.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, she can cut up.
Bound's really good.
Bound is
fucking fantastic, actually. I don't think I've seen Bound since I was like 24.
No, it's fantastic.
It's, okay, good.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Great.
Wachowskis are fantastic. Yeah. So anyway, so the story that I think a lot of people captured a lot of people's attention last week was the firing of two writers from ArenaNet, developer of Guild Wars 2, after a – so I guess the way I'll set this up is a writer, actually a narrative designer, important distinction, narrative designer on Guild Wars 2 named Jessica Price, made a tweet thread, like 20 some tweets that was basically like, hey, here is why it's hard to develop kind of dialogue trees and dialogue systems for players in MMOs. That thread was an interesting thing. It was just kind of like, hey, you can do branching to some degree, but like you want to give your players some choices around how they understand their characters and how they express their characters. But at the same time, MMOs are not single player games, and there is a serious limit to how much branching can be done given resources, blah, blah, blah. And a fan who was also like a partnered streamer with Guild Wars responded and said, really interesting thread to read. However, allow me to disagree slightly. And then had another few tweets that was like, here's how actually you can use branching dialogue. And so then Price replies to that streamer, Deroyer, I don't know how to pronounce this person's name on the internet, D-E-R-O-I-R, and then basically said, like, hey, thanks for mansplaining. Like, thanks for trying to tell me what to do with my job.
How to do my job.
How to do my job, basically. Yeah. And then made a more broad tweet, a quote tweet that was like, here we go again. Like, I get this all the time. I can't believe people consistently try to tell me how to do my job. I'm a trained expert. Like, I'm so exhausted by this. And
people got sort of latched onto the term rando asshat.
That was the phrase.
Term being used to describe the person that chimed in that was more broadly representative, I think, for her of a lot more people that do that on a daily basis.
Right. Well, to be clear, the thing that she said was like, she didn't. I don't think that was a quote tweet. And I'm not. I don't want to like get into the.
Yeah, her Twitter's locked now, so it's a little hard to.
Yeah, but my understanding is that she was saying like the next rando asshat who blah 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 is like, which is not right. Calling him a rando asshat. But I just wanted to, for the sake of clarity, she was not like, you're a rando asshat.
Right.
It was like this general, which in some ways maybe is part of what causes a greater deal of ire, which is like, oh, for this developer, there's an entire category of people who are quote rando asshats, which. I understand what the feeling is. That is a feeling that is totally.
Yep.
In any case, so you another developer there who's been there for 9 years, another person on the writing team, was basically like, hey, like she wasn't asking for advice here, and the community went like apeshit on both of them. Went very very hard on Reddit,
harassed
very much like you know. Brigading their mentions and being very, very aggressive and calling for their firing. And so ArenaNet fired them, both of them. The statement that was given, I'm going to find the exact wording because I think that it is worth framing that exactly the way it was framed. 1 second.
Do you want me to read it?
Yeah. Do you have it?
Yeah. So they gave this out to Eurogamer and a couple of their outlets. But so this is the official statement from ArenaNet that was – quote, we strive to cultivate an atmosphere of transparency around the making of our games and encourage our teams to be involved in open, positive discussion with our community. Earlier this week, two of our employees failed to uphold our standards of communication with our players and fans, and they are no longer with the company.
Right. There was also a post on the Guild Wars 2 forums before they gave quote. That was from Mike O'Brien from the company who said recently two of
he's
our
the president of
ArenaNet who said recently two of our employees failed to uphold our standards of communicating with players. Their attacks on the community were unacceptable.
Jesus.
As a result, they're no longer with the company. I want to be clear that the statements they made do not reflect the views of ArenaNet at all. As a company, we always strive to have a collaborative relationship with the Guild Wars community. We value your input. We make this game for you. And I think that this sparked a really large conversation between developers and players and critics and journalists and industry analysts and everything in between, artists, everything, you know, freelancers, contractors, ranging from what the place of social media was in someone's work or private life to what should be expected in terms of fan communication to, you know, whether or not this will lead to or has already led to an enabling and an encouraging of some really gross behavior on the part of kind of these rancid fans who just like have decided this is entitled to them, that like we decide who works there. I'm very curious, you know, to go around the table because I don't know that there is – I don't think there's one right way to feel about the situation. I think that like there's some nuance here and it's worth talking about it with some nuance, even though I also think I can firmly say that I personally think that the firing is a step too far and is like shitty as hell. So I'm just curious from y'all, like how did you feel as this was unfurling or as you came to it over the weekend or whatever?
I could say that just as a woman online, the amount of men who tell me how to do my job – all of my jobs, any of my jobs, how to do emergency medicine, how to do writing about video games, how to do video editing, how to do podcasting, about any of the things that I do professionally can be the most exhausting and frustrating and infuriating thing in the universe. Like you can post something where you're sort of sharing your work or you're sharing, you know, some piece of advice or some piece of your knowledge and your life, and you can fucking guarantee it's like clockwork that somebody may or may not be a man. I'm not saying this is always a man doing this, and I don't want to like be unclear about that. Like women can certainly do this as well. And yet, oftentimes it seems like it's a dude doing it. So again, just to be clear, it can be anybody. People can be shitty no matter what they are. I want to be super clear about that. But it is so infuriating and it is so frustrating because you can be sitting there and saying like, oh, you know, I have all these credentials. I've been doing this type of work for so long. Like I feel like confident in my work. And just have this amount of noise. It's not one person saying it, and I think that's probably the thing that should be super, super clear when I'm saying this. It's never that one person saying it. It's the fact that this is a torrential downpour of bullshit that sort of comes at you all the time, constantly, 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 oftentimes from people who say they're fans of the thing that you do or say or claim to be a fan or claim to be interested in whatever type of work it is. I imagine, I don't know Jessica personally, but I imagine that this was that drop in the bucket that just overflowed the bucket. So I have a lot of sympathy for her and what she went through with this. And I do agree that firing her was a step too far, and the other developer was a step way too far, and it is enabling of fans. Do I necessarily think she approached this the best possible way out of all ways in the world? Maybe not.
Right.
But I have absolutely been guilty of doing this as well. Like, I have gone off on somebody.
That is 100% what I come back to is like, I had a thread about this the other day that fundamentally said that the thing that I was most surprised in seeing from my fans, from people who followed us, all of us, and who were people who wrote into us and who've been supportive of all of our endeavors, are people who kind of said like, yeah, but she was really mean to that guy.
Oh my God.
And so like, I guess it makes sense that, you know, the customer's always right. You got to fire. Like the idea that is we don't even have to get into what the customer is always right means actually or whether or not it's, you know, applicable here or whether or not customers like it's such a messy thing there already. But for me, there was just this real case of binary thinking of – and I'm not saying – I don't know at all if Jessica had previously – if either of these workers had previously had instances of disciplining inside of the office or if they'd been on a performance plan or had meetings or had yearly reviews in which social media behavior or if there was a publicly or a privately known and available social media policy that they'd broken many – I don't know. I'm not saying that I know that stuff, and that's not what I was saying on that in that Twitter thread. But what I was saying was that in the responses I saw from so many people, there was this binary thinking of like, well, either you're hired or you're fired, and there's nothing to do if the second you step over a line, get the fuck out. I'm like, you think I haven't said some shit on Twitter where someone privately has been like, hey, Austin, like it's your Twitter. You can do whatever you want. But also, bruh, like I think I've had that conversation with all three of you. I've had it with everybody I've had it with people that I've worked with where I wasn't their bosses where I was like, yo, did you just tweet that?
Yeah.
And that stuff happens and is – but it is also my job as a manager to have to be like, okay, I know here is what the social media policy space is. I'm not here to shut down conversation and I'm not here to say that like you can't say XYZ, but like, hey, here are some people you upset. And is there a reason to have for that to have happened? Like what was the thinking there? Let's talk about other things that we can do when XYZ thing happens. And there's this huge space from that conversation, which is like a little pull aside at lunch where we're like, oh, hey, on Twitter this weekend, you know, I'm sorry I said XYZ thing. I really riled up those people, huh? Two, you know, hey, you've broken this policy 30 times. You've lost your job. There are a million things between those two. And for so many people, those million things just didn't exist in their minds. And I think a lot of people pointed out to me, they were like, hey, well, that's because for 90% of the jobs in America that or for the people responding, there isn't that middle ground. Or at least that middle ground is so vague as to not be existent. We're like, no, you broke the rules. Get the fuck out of Walmart. Like there's no middle ground there. And so I'm sympathetic to that view, but I think we should still be able to hold companies like Arena to a higher standard and demand that in a situation like this, they don't concede to a mob of people, which sends them a message that this sort of action will work.
When we live in a world where like you're expected to talk to fans, right? Like you don't get paid for that part.
No, it's you do not.
It just comes with the territory that engagement is, and it does work, right? Like, engagement is like net positive probably for a lot of things, but it doesn't come with it comes with consequences. And like this is one of those situations where she was probably not being paid to talk to fans, and this is something she did on the side. And if you had you know, seen her Twitter feed before. This is was like not uncommon, like for her to like explain like different like approaches to game design. She was also very vocal about, you know, different social justice issues. And so like
right.
the tone was like very consistent. And so that's what makes like this particular response by ArenaNet like really infuriating, like regardless of how you feel about how she handled this particular instance. Like we've all had moments where we do that lash out. But like this, all this does is just give the mob like way more incentive because they got
yeah.
They got victims. Like they won. They won this skirmish
That's how they see it. They right. think of this as a game as like points on the board, and it's so frustrating.
And they didn't extract anything from ArenaNet, right? Like if there was right. a concentrated campaign that showed they were losing money because people stopped buying cosmetics, like you can start to see where like the corporate like inches in on like making a decision like this, but this is like purely an optics thing where like over the course of a couple of days, like a bunch of Reddit threads like brought like two people out of their like gainful employment, and especially what's going on right now with like there's a whole thing called ComicsGate happening, this stuff is in the water, and like the more that you like ArenaNet has only churned it in a way, especially with the statements they put out. Like the statements they put out basically said like, you won, you're right, like and it's yep. it's just so makes me so angry to see that's the response, because it's so knee-jerky. It is not understanding the larger context this takes place
100%.
In. And there were so many other ways for you to pull those two aside and find some way that didn't even force them to give an apology, but just there are other ways to handle this where everyone comes out on the other side once the headlines go away 3 days later.
Right.
But instead, one, you just fueled it more. And two, you've only inspired further attack down the line. Like, this will just happen again with Guild Wars 2. Or you'll just get a bunch of team members that no longer want to interact with their fans, because yep. what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
Yep.
You totally. Might just get fired if you get frustrated with
right.
someone.
Yeah, you don't get a bonus for, like, sending out 10 tweets to fans.
Right,
nope.
right, yeah.
Right, that 20-tweet thread about, like, oh, let me give some insight into, like, designing the dialogue system. That wasn't – there was nothing – she wasn't gaining anything from right. that outside of reaching her audience and the fans that she wanted to reach. I mean, I also think that this points to some degree to one of the things about Twitter that's so frustrating is that it is not a well-designed platform for talking to people who have lots of followers. Like, if you are someone who wants to talk to any of us on this podcast, like, it's so easy for your words to get lost in the mix of so many other people. It's so easy for your words to get misunderstood. I don't even remember. It might have been about this even, but someone sent me a tweet, I think, yeah, in response to my thread about this, that with no context, because I didn't know this person, they were just, like, making a light joke. And I was completely, like, I expected better from you or something like that. And they were like, oh, no, like, here, I see how you read it. My bad. Here's what I meant. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's a funny joke. But, like, it's such an onslaught and so many times it's so clearly in bad faith that it's so hard sometimes to read good faith into comments. Which is the thing is, like, this person who sent her that thing and who, like, actually, I have some thoughts – probably meant that the nicest way they could conceive of, and it doesn't matter. Like, there's a point at which,
or it's possible that they did. I'm not sure if they necessarily were well intentioned. It's feasible, but
the yeah. point is that Twitter
but
is a
but it's
platform.
Also very difficult. Right,
it's almost impossible to tell.
It's impossible yeah. to tell yeah. on Twitter, and when it happens in such a pattern of like undercutting someone whose job it is to do this and who is professionally trained to do it again and again and again, it will lead to moments where you're like, I'm going to fucking tear down this whole building. Like, I can't believe I have some rando asshat who I don't know. That's the other thing is, like, there's often sites like Twitter build a presumption of familiarity. It's like the other thing I find myself saying more and more is like, hey, reconsider how close we are. Like, we've never spoken before, and you're making a joke about me like we go back to high school. And that comes from a sort of one-sided connectivity, and it's like what our careers are based on. We're doing a podcast that is about feeling like you know us to some degree. You hear us every week, and that produces a sense of like, oh yeah, I can just like reach out and blah, 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 and speak with a sort of familiarity. And that is powerful, and I think that it leads to one of the reasons why podcasts like this and live streaming and all that is so successful, because you can turn to people, you know, in their output in moments of darkness, in moments of stress, in moments where you need relief. And it's why I'm happy to do what we do. But I do also think that it especially when it's not – when platforms like Twitter are so unwilling to provide services or unwilling to – produce a flow that allows things to hit you in a way that like lets you actually engage with people while still not being overwhelming. Like, it just kind of poisons the well a little bit, and it means that like a lot of these reactions come from just being fucking buried under bullshit. It's so frustrating. Yeah. Anyway, Rob, sorry, I was going around the table and then I stopped.
No, it's something else that's going on here is like, this isn't like, Twitter is not school. Like, people in positions of authority and expertise are not actually obligated to entertain or treat with a great deal of respect your naive, and I mean that in the, like, you simply have not studied, you don't have the training.
Right.
Yeah. Your naive understanding of the field in which they work and practice their craft. And even if this guy is well-intentioned, and there's nothing, like, I didn't see anything, like, he didn't seem like a bad actor, but at the same time, it looked like he was making a pretty basic-ass point that was absolutely pretty much implied by her thread to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's yet another one of those cases of, like, you've been in a position where you could teach, like, a capstone-level, like, 500-level, like, course in this exact subject, and somebody's raising their hand with, like, a fucking, like, 101-level question that is covered in the first 5 minutes of the talk. Like you, and they're not, and nobody's obligated at that point to catch you up to their level in that conversation where you can participate productively. And there is a point where if people get heated or, like, you are the several hundredth person to raise those same basic points as before, you might just end up being the person that, you know, someone runs out of patience for. And it's not necessarily, like, about you or about, like, them, like, you know, you having malicious intent. It's just you haven't put in the work to take part in those conversations. You're not operating at their level, and you're still sort of stepping up there, acting as if your entire, like, your idea that you're sort of going off the cuff with should be treated with the same consideration as a fellow expert in the field. That's, you know, it's that I think is one of the frustrating parts of this for me is, like, Twitter encourages a lot of people making really basic and mundane observations as if they are novel points, and that shit is exhausting in its own way. Like, even setting aside the toxicity, like, having this chorus of people all having the same fucking basic ass thought that should already have been dismissed out of hand, that is exhausting too.
Yeah, and I think there's a level of expecting emotional labor here as well, especially in this case of, like, hey, I said something. Did you hear me? Mm-hmm. Like, can you make space for me and listen to me? And also, I have, like, a really good point. And also, like, here's what I think about this. Like, it's a very, like, incredibly frustrating thing where somebody assumes that you're going to make that room for them or assumes that they're going to make room to not only patiently explain to them, but also to, like, you know, give you a lot of your time and give you a lot of, you know, effort to actually sort of clarify something and literally teach something. Like, that's a job. Teaching is a job.
Yeah.
Being on Twitter is not this person's job anyway. I mean, I know it is a job, but, like, that's not this person's job in this case.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and I see that in a really gendered way as well. Like, expecting emotional labor, that's a thing that, you know, there's been a lot of studies on this where women are expected in the workplace to do certain extra things in a lot of ways to, like, you know, the soft skills to, like, understand or smooth things over or that sort of thing. And that's also, like, incredibly frustrating. Even if you have the personality type where you enjoy doing that sort of thing or are fine doing that sort of thing, like, I see this happen all the time where it's almost like, you know, people are just, like, throwing that on women, like, oh, I expect you to kind of do this extra bit sort of
this
thing.
Is like, yeah
it's like, okay,
this is on
why
your plate. Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that there's so much here that reflects our so many of the unanswered or non-normalized or non-unsettled parts and unsettling parts of being a person in 2018 in a public-facing role of any kind, or in roles that are would traditionally not be public-facing, right? The some people who were developing games would have blogs for years and years. It's not like there were not forward-facing stuff on game dev teams. But it's so much easier now, and also is encouraged, if not by your employer necessarily, by the market. To be
gotta
public
have a brand,
facing.
Baby.
You gotta have a brand. That's exactly it.
And you should, right? Like, you are rewarded. Like, there is intrinsic, like, a huge part of the reason you use Twitter is because when I leave a publication, yep. I can bring people with me that is irrespective of the platform that hosted what I was writing before. Like, there is enormous power and agency in using places like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram 100%. Or whatever. Choose your platform. That is disconnected from an employer. So having that stuff is part of actually giving yourself power in the employer-employee yes. relationship. And, like, that gives me power past, present, future in a way that, different generations did not have. And so there's the market pressure because yep. from an employment status, like, this can help you. And, like, if you have a bunch of followers, like, no shit that an employer is going to look at that and think, like, maybe this person is doing something right if people are listening to them.
Right. But at the same time, the culture, as Rob has suggested, has taught people to say, like, oh, I should raise my hand. And in fact, it's often part of that same thing of, like, yeah. I need a brand. I need my fucking way in. I'm going to respond to whatever anybody says. See me. Bring me up. So that's part of the culture thing that Rob is saying. And then again, like, as a platform – in so many ways, Twitter encourages people to just say the first thing that comes to their mind.
Or be outrageous. Or be obnoxious.
Totally. But I mean, like, even just how many times have you been like, what's a good place to eat in Brooklyn? And then, like, 30 people say the same restaurant. And that's just, like, the platform doesn't make it clear to people that you've heard the same shit 30 times.
Yep.
And so it's a combination of this culture of, like, me, like, I need to tell you what to do. And again, it's absolutely a gendered thing, yeah. at least to some degree. Yeah. And then on top of that, a platform that has never really decided to take seriously the ways in which this stuff can lead to brigading and, like, really toxic behaviors and trying to push someone off of this platform. And it's why again and again we see people leaving these various platforms. And it's frustrating because when it works well – there is a lot to gain there. I think I said this a long time ago, but, like, one of the best things I learned to do on Twitter and the thing that actually helped me, like, become someone people liked to talk to was to only respond when I actually had something novel to say and to be deadly serious when it came to deciding whether I did or not. Whether or not the person I was talking – like, thinking, hey – this person's job is – I mean, for years, I was the player who was like, well, why didn't they just add blank to this game? And then, you start to talk to people who make games, or you start to make games yourself, and you're like, oh, yeah.
I see.
You think of thing A through Z, and, it turns out A through X just don't work. You know, all of those other solutions didn't work. And then you try some hobbled together version of Y and Z. And that works, and, like, fuck it, ship it. Like, that's what we got to go with. And in the moment when I realized, like, okay, I don't need to rush to be the first person to make a joke, and also I don't need to be the person who says, well, actually, if you'd read this thing that I read, and instead focused on where's my area of expertise, where do I genuinely have a really good joke to tell, hey, am I just repeating this person's point or joke back to them, hey, am I elbowing into a social group that maybe I just am jealous of? There's so many behaviors where it's like, hey, am I just, like, in this person's mentions constantly and they never reply to me? Maybe I'm not taking a hint. Like, learning that stuff helped me actually then focus on the actual positive relationships that I was building on Twitter. And there are lots of people I don't mean this in an upward mobility sense. I genuinely, like, a lot of my favorite people I follow on Twitter are people who just are really funny and really mm-hmm. smart and who do provide really great insight about topics I don't happen to know a lot about and who don't have huge social media followings but who have been consistently a joy to talk to. And that comes from the same reasons anybody is a joy to talk to, being conscientious, being empathetic, being thoughtful in your responses. And all of that gets erased when what you want is the person you don't – they said a mean thing to us. Like, rah-rah, get them off the fucking game. There's just, like, none of that. There's no compassion. There's no empathy. There's no desire to understand the actual process that goes into making a game. And it's just so frustrating. Whew.
The, The other thing I find deeply fucking frustrating about this, and actually, like, have difficulty sort of getting a handle on my contempt, is the way ArenaNet conducted themselves around this, and the lack of leadership being shown by Mike O'Brien. It's 2018. Like, at this point, part of knowing how the games industry works is knowing that brigading campaigns happen, coordinated harassment campaigns happen, and that every time, like, you have to really carefully consider what is happening online and how much fire is behind the smoke you are seeing.
Yes,
like,
you're really seeing a ton of smoke, but what is it really?
Yeah, like how many people really give that much of a shit? And two, every time you sort of give in to the mob, you are creating perverse incentives to encourage further harassment of your employees and harassment of other people's employees. You're like, you are failing a test of collegiality, of being a good member of your profession, because now you are basically sending up a signal that, like, hey, sometimes this shit works. And those costs will not be borne by you, the CEO. Right. It will be borne by those employees whose example you are taking advantage of, saying, like, well, we have lots of people who engage in positive interactions with the community. God. Not me, by the way. I'm a faceless suit. Like, you know, hiding behind a rarely used corporate forum account. But my employees talk to you folks and do a lot of outreach on behalf of the company. And if it ever goes bad, fuck them. Under the bus they go.
Right.
Like, that pisses me off.
Yeah, and what I do want to say that we should move, not with care necessarily, but we should move thoughtfully, because I do think that one of the rhetorical moves I've seen put to work by bad faith actors, but also, again, by people who I know who like our work and respect us, is to say, yeah, but, like, you love shouting at Scott Pruitt at a diner, and, like, one, you damn right I do.
Yeah.
Two, this is not the same thing.
Nope.
In the world in which a game designer or a narrative designer on a game is rude to somebody on Twitter. I'm not even saying that's what this is. She was very clearly, like, blowing off some steam and was mad as shit. I don't know if I'm going to go all the way to rude. Maybe rude. In the instance when someone is rude to someone on Twitter because they got an explanation, a 101 level explanation in response to a 500 level, 20 post thread, that is not the same thing as poisoning our water.
Yep.
This is not a hard concept. I'm not saying that people should never be fired for their jobs. And any attempt to say that, like, oh, yeah, I was happy when someone who was supporting white nationalists lost their job, I should never want anyone to lose their job, is, again, either in an argument from the worst position, the like, completely disingenuous, you're just trying to fatigue me with new information, with words, with just, like, you're just trying
you
to hit my
eyes.
Have
you considered it's a slippery slope?
Yeah, have I considered? Yes, I have, and guess what? It ain't. Because there's a huge difference between someone who was rude to me on Twitter and someone who was a racist.
It ain't the same mountain.
It isn't. It and ain't. We have to talk about substance and not just form in this way, right? We have to talk about what is being said. What is the difference between Mitch McConnell and Price? And I've already forgotten her first name. I feel – Jessica Price.
Jessica Price, yeah.
I got there. And that is, again, such a disingenuous argument, or a naive argument. And I don't mean naive in the dictionary sense. I mean the you've been taken in sense.
Yeah.
Like, that argument is it's in some ways a retreat from having to deal with the specifics of an argument. A foreclosing that there could be specific differences despite there being similarities in form. There's a huge difference between this, for instance, saying something like, hey, I don't think this person should keep their job because they were sexually harassing people, or because they were defrauding the company, or because they were not just rude on Twitter, but were explicitly targeting people on Twitter and explicitly leading hate campaigns on Twitter and specifically guiding harassment campaigns on Twitter, versus I got rude on Twitter once. Those, there's a huge gap between those two things. There's a huge divide. And we have to – and I'm not saying that there's never any gray area. There are people on Twitter who I think are super shitty and who do – and who absolutely do something that walks right up against the line of leading an organized harassment campaign. I know this because I've been on the other side of one, because I faved a tweet in which someone said once, ugh, I'm it's a bummer that Total Biscuit died. I would have rathered him live to confront the fact that for some amount of years he did some really shitty stuff.
Right.
I faved that tweet, and what happened was I couldn't use Twitter for 3 days because someone was like, Austin faved that tweet, everybody, go get him. I still don't want that dude to be, you know, fired. That's right up against the line. That's right up against the line of is this a targeted harassment campaign? Even there, so I do think there's nuance here.
Plausible deniability.
Totally.
Gives Twitter all like that. Like
it sucks.
Your discussion about like sort of the platform and its inability to communicate people to things that are occurring simultaneously, like is very much what allows plausible deniability of harassment campaigns. Like this is how brigading works, is like it takes advantage of weaknesses in the platform so you can exploit people in a way that is hard for others to actually understand. When you copy and paste a tweet and look at that on Twitter.com, you don't see all the replies. Like you see are like selected by Twitter for you to see that are usually highlighted by engagement and faves and stuff like that. You don't see the whole mountain of shit that like goes through someone's feed. And so like it's built in a way where you can't actually prove how bad the harassment is because there's no way for you to fucking see it.
And you see
how Twitter lands at that, right? Because it makes sense from a certain perspective, but it exposes a structural weakness that things like the way ArenaNet handles this only encourages people to do stuff like this in the future because it works, it's hard to detect, and like it continues to be successful not only in video games but in all sorts of other mediums.
Yeah.
But I think what's bothering me a little bit here is the problem here isn't that the people in charge of ArenaNet are insufficiently online to understand what is going on.
Right.
Like, yes, there are a lot of structural issues with Twitter. Like, that we can, like, we live them. We all know, like, the many things that are fucked up with the way Twitter, like, presents information, the voices it elevates, all that stuff, the stuff it foregrounds. But I look at what happened in this specific case, and I see ArenaNet making a positive decision, not just, like, reacting to, like, I can't know all their motivations, but this was a very swift and pointed reaction, not just to fire the original offending employee
for
having one moment in which they were an asshole online, but then firing another employee who gave a pretty considered, measured defense and explanation of what's behind that moment.
Yeah, we didn't even
this
read
was,
that.
Like, it's really beyond the pale. I agree.
This was like ArenaNet chose to brandish two severed heads immediately in front of the crowd and say, like, this is completely, these people have shamed ArenaNet. They brought disgrace to the house of Guild Wars, and they have been put to the sword. Like, that is what they chose to do. That is the message they sent out. And it's not that they were, like, tricked by, it can't just be put down to, like, they were tricked by brigading. They didn't know how, like, being online works. They wanted to send a message here, both to this audience and to their employees.
And to their staff.
And that's what I find so fucking toxic about this is this isn't just like they handled it badly and they panicked in 1 minute. There's like an affirmative decision to send this message about how they view their fans, including their worst fucking fans, and how they view their employees who make the fucking game.
Right, including Peter Fries is the other person who was fired here. This is a reading from TheVerge.com. Fries, a 12-year veteran of the company, was also fired, presumably for a now-deleted series of tweets where he came to the defense of his coworker. Quote, here's a bit of insight that I legitimately hope he reflects on. She never asked for his feedback. These are our private social media accounts. Imagine you're an astronomer and you start sharing some things you've learned in the last few months since you began a research project observing Saturn, only to have the observation techniques explained to you by a layman. Jessica is great at her job and deserves to be treated with respect.
Yeah, like what about that? What
and who,
about that?
So hateful.
I can't even conceive of how
their
that
attacks
is bad.
On the community were unacceptable.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
You're absolutely right.
I don't know if his Twitter is liked, but I also remember him saying something about, like, this is July 4th. This is our day off. Please. Yeah. Like, in a very polite way. Like, please, this is our day off. Can you please stop? Like, stop harassing her. Like, asking nicely. Very much so. Like, this is a national holiday.
There are no days off at ArenaNet now.
No, that's
yeah,
it.
Like this is hellish. This sets a hellish precedent, and things have already not been amazing for developers in terms of labor and organizing and work practices. And Patrick, you wrote that great story today about that, and it's just like, oh god, the way this all came together, it was almost like a heat wave, like a fever pitch of just bad things in the game industry, all sort of calcifying into one little nugget that turned into a black hole.
This was the first time I had. You know, there have been moments when we've been under the microscope for missteps, 100%. Sure. Like, I'm totally happy to own up to when we fuck up on things. And there have been plenty of times when I haven't fucked up, but someone still sends, you know, thousands of people after me on Twitter or whatever. Yep. And there have been death threats, and there have been, you know, I have had moments where as an individual I have felt targeted in ways that have made me feel unsafe. This is the first time where I felt like, oh shit, are we going to get a flare-up, like a real big industry-wide flare-up of Gamergate again? It felt like the constituent parts were coming together. The narrative was crystallizing. The fence sitters, the people who were like messaging me going, I'm surprised that you would support Jessica Price in this. Like, I don't fucking know Jessica Price, but I support like the shit I've been saying for the last 30 minutes. And it felt like this stuff was building to a response that, and it still feels that way to me. But you know, when the days that this was first starting up, there was like a shudder, it felt like an echo of Gamergate. And obviously, we've all said this before that like Gamergate existed before we called it Gamergate. I'm not surprised that there are still like very shitty, very misogynistic elements of the games industry and games culture. This is not me saying like, oh wow, I didn't know Gamergate was still around. Like, I fucking believe me, I know. But it was the first time that it felt like all the ingredients were back in the pot and all they needed was a stir, and there were lots of people lining up with spoons.
And this was that spark. And ArenaNet lit the burner underneath to make the shit soup, basically.
Rob, you raised your hand.
No, I was giggling. But the thing it reminds me of is like it reminds me of that fucking like letter from the publisher that the Escapist like put up like about halfway through Gamergate, where it was like, we've got a new ethics policy. Mm-hmm. Thanks to you. The gamers. No one's going to thank you for your sacrifice, but you've made the Defy Media properties better forever and all time. Now I have to leave this company and go manage Milo's business affairs, which are going to go super well under my stewardship. Trust me. But you should know that before I turn the lights off at The Escapist, you've made it a great website.
Or
so I could imagine.
Right.
Something like that.
Well, that was the vibe from this to me was just one of those things of like, I can imagine this being a catalyst for a lot of people who are acting in good intentions and who say, well, wait a second, these people have some good points, which is what happened last time. And it is so important for people to get ahead of that. And to make it clear that, you know, we all run our own communities on the internet at this point. We all belong to many communities, but we all also curate our own social network feeds. We deal with people on our Facebook pages, on our Twitter pages, on our Instagram pages, as Patrick was saying earlier. Like, regardless of what your platform is, 2018 means to some degree you are some sort of brand, even if all you're doing is talking about bad basketball trades. As mindful as you can about how you're curating those spaces and which ideas you're encouraging and are enabling. I don't think everyone needs to agree with me on shit to be a good person or anything like that. But I do think that – I do know that, you know, in 2014 I wish that there had been people who had large and mid-sized and small communities who were not sitting on the fence.
Everyone sat on the fence. Like, I was the frustrating know. Part. I worked on a website that sat on the fence.
Right.
And not because they're full of bad people. It's just that people waited way too long to pull the trigger.
Yep.
Not that it would have squashed a thing. Not that Gamergate would have stopped at its tracks. But there were moments for people to put up the sort of like emotional and psychological support as an industry, and they chose not to. And the video game development industry, the publishers, still have not done that. Like, this is just a reverberation of cowardice in the face of actually facing down like these toxic subsets of players, like and they refuse to do that. This is rooted back into like why developers don't talk about politics.
Yep.
Because like all of this is like in the same mixture together. It all comes from some of the same sources, and it's just, yeah, it's constantly frustrating. I'm upset with how I acted back then. I could have been more forceful. Everyone could have been more forceful. Even the people that were could have been more united, and they weren't. And we're seeing other, you know, where you see this pop out elsewhere. You know, I mean,
which is Comicsgate.
Gamergate didn't get Trump elected, but the playbook that was established during Gamergate was certainly used by all sorts of people during that, and it's not going away either. But ignoring it does not. You can't squash and solve the problem, but you can certainly acknowledge that it's a problem. And that's like fucking base level
step one thing
you can do.
But I think one of the things that's going to make solving that really difficult is the other thing this ties into, and it's the rhetoric that ArenaNet used to justify these firings, is that we just finished E3, where we see developer after developer, publisher after publisher, sort of go up there and celebrate you, the gamer. Celebrate our fans, the people, you know, we make the games, but you fans are the ones who really make them special, which is debatable, but it's rhetoric that like developer after developer sort of falls back on, because one, it plays well. It's an easy applause line, you know? Yeah. Like everyone plays Destiny fucking hates us right now, but we love you guys so much. We're just so grateful that you guys continue to play Destiny. And, you know, even when you're shitty online, it just shows how passionate you are. Like I literally had an exchange with a developer from DICE where I was talking about some of the flare up around, you know, the fact that there's female soldiers and a woman on the cover, and even there they tend to couch things in terms of like, it just shows how resonant this franchise is with our fans, and we take a great deal of pride in that relationship. It is this inability to draw a distinction between like positive fandom and enjoyment of something versus like toxic entitlement. Very few, right. Like the companies will not draw the line between these two ways to engage with something and theoretically love something, right? Like what, like one is a form of love and one is like an attempt to control something you enjoy. And that's a distinction that is important, but bad actors like to blur that distinction a lot. And companies tend to pretend the distinction doesn't exist at all. That fans are always good, the customer is always right, we are here to serve you. And there are moments where that absolutely cannot be true. There are moments where you have to serve the well-being of your employees, of your business first.
Right.
And you have to be able to own that. Otherwise, you're always going to be playing this game of whenever the fan, like, basically trying to find a scapegoat for every time there's a decision that you made that's become a lightning rod of fan displeasure. Or just one of your employees had a public profile or said something online that also made them a lightning rod for a mob for no good reason. There's a point where you have to be able to say, like, you know what, fuck you. We're not doing shit. Get out of my shop.
Right. 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 There needs to be a discerning difference.
Done that, by the way.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, same. There needs to be a discerning difference between, hey, this is actually, you know, someone took a step too far. Someone actually did something that does not reflect the company. And, you know, if one of you started tweeting, like, Nazi propaganda, we would have a number of talks.
Yes.
Right. If some of you started tweeting transphobic, if some of y'all were like, I think it's good that the TERFs marched at the front of Pride London, we would have some talks and we'd be like, hey, like you're hurting very specific people. You're hurting them in a way that is not just they wish that you could have a shotgun in each equipment slot in Destiny 2. Because like, you know, one, same, absolutely same. And I think there was a place for a sort of a feedback mechanism for things like, I wish that the heavy weapon system was different in Destiny. But that's – that one ideally should be in a way that does not take on the character of harassment even though it – or despite the fact that it is on its face or in terms of its content isn't harassment, that structurally we need to find ways to provide feedback that are not about that. But also we need to make sure that we're clear that, that there is a distinction between the two, and also a distinction between genuinely real feedback that when you do step on someone's toe and when you do actually hurt them. Like I've said, there have been a number of times when we have fucked up, and I have no problem saying that we have fucked up. I think we are always trying to write the sorts of new types of stories. We're always trying to be honest about our responses to things. And sometimes that means that we are heated in ways that we wouldn't be in other circumstances. And other times, we completely stand by our heated game moments because ours are not the same as many Twitch users.
Goddamn right.
but there are times when I, as a content creator on the internet, do have to fucking swallow my pride and be like, yeah, a lot of people are mad at me on some shit. All right. I'm going to read all these fucking mentions and just feel bad for a few days and think about what I did. And there's a difference between that and someone who is mad at us because we had an open dialogue about how we were going to or not going to cover Kingdom Come Deliverance. There's a distinction between right. those two things. And that's for me where I draw that line, is the difference between actually doing someone psychological harm and making content that someone disagrees with. And that's like such a big jump for me. You look like you had something else, Danielle.
Well, I was going to say, so much of this boils down for me to treating people like people.
Yeah.
And I know this sounds almost reductive in how simple it is, but so much of this, from everything I understand about people on who do sort of participate in harassment campaigns, is just being unable to see another person online as a human fucking being. Like, a lot of the stuff around when Anita Sarkeesian was being harassed, a lot of the research that she had done, and she and like Catherine Cross were on a panel once where they talked about like some research that was done, and a lot of it was down to, it's just a game, and it's just like a figurehead, and it's just this idea of like feminazis, you know, ruining their fun. Like it gets boiled down into these very dehumanizing sort of tactics.
Yeah.
And so much of it can be, if not solved, because these are not easy problems to solve, but so much of it could be, things would be better if we all treated each other like human beings. That's
sure
the fucking,
would.
You know,
cheers
cheesy
to that.
Ass corny cornball no, thing
no,
to
no,
say.
But no, it however cheesy it is, I think it actually can work as a lens for root problems. For me, that you build from that. You go, okay, well, why don't people see other people as humans?
Right.
And the answer is multifaceted. Partly it's a platform thing, but partly it's misogyny and it's racism and it is a culture of a kind of a hegemonic discourse that says certain people are more valuable than others. Partly in our space specifically, it's because games are treated as commodities. They're treated as if they appear on the shelf fully formed. As if no one touched them or made them. They often reflect a wild ideology about how certain people who touch the game are more important than other people who touch the game. And not only in an auteur theory sense, but often in an auteur theory sense. Sometimes in a, well, writers aren't really developers sense.
God!
But often it is it is this combination of factors of like, well, all right, well, some people don't think anything a woman says about a creative work will ever be valuable, and a lot of people aren't interested in how a game was made, and a lot of people aren't interested in any sort of insight into how anything they buy is made. They only care about buying it and consuming it, and all of that can fuel a sort of really shitty, trolly, awful, dehumanizing response. And I don't know. So I don't think it's cheesy.
Thanks.
I think it's like the it's the best starting place we can have.
Sometimes it helps as like a mantra to like just say to myself, especially on my worst days or on days where I feel crappy online or I'm having a rough day online, to like, and again, I'm not perfect on this, but to kind of just sort of remind myself like there's a human being behind this, and there's a human being behind this sentiment, whether I agree with it or not.
Right.
And to like not do that thing where someone's dehumanizing me, well, I will try to take the high road.
I always do my best to, when someone cuts me off and I'm driving, I was like, man, I don't know what type of date they had. Like, fuck them for cutting me off.
Somebody's giving birth in the backseat, you know?
Clue.
Like,
right. I don't know where they're going. I don't know what they're up to. I'm not going to – I'm going to focus on getting where I need to go and do my best to not get I'll remember that there's a person behind the other wheel, you know, and who knows where they're at.
And they might suck and they might be wrong.
Totally.
That's the other thing. Like, they might be a piece of shit.
They might. And if you know what, and if everybody in you know, Connecticut cuts me off again and again, maybe I have some things to say about
Connecticut. Might be a little pissed off.
Maybe I'm pissed off at Connecticut for a while. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, I think that comes to our conclusion today. Any final thoughts on this? Anyone else have any lingering? I guess I should note one fun thing that's come out of this is that the International Game Developers Association ran a post today, like, you know, an hour ago or something, that is basically like, hey, the IGDA strongly encourages its members, both as individuals and studios and partners, to clarify the guidelines and expectations around social media use, both in professional and personal accounts. It's this long, you know, post that's like, here are some questions to ask your boss. Like, hey, what am I allowed to do on social media without you fucking firing me? What steps will happen if I'm hostile towards someone on the internet? What steps will you take if someone is shitty to us?
Yeah.
And I've said this before with the kind of discourse around passion in hiring practices, but another good first step is to start talking about material benefits and situations about where you work and where you'd like to work. In the same way that I encourage potential employees to continue to push their current employers and future employers by asking them things like, oh, so what is, you know, what's crunch like here? What's, you know, what is work-life balance like here? How do you help encourage that and force that to be an issue? That, and it's one of the reasons why organized labor is actually very useful, because an individual asking this to a potential employer doesn't have a lot to bargain with. But as a group, you know, you actually can start to say, okay, this is actually important to enough of us that I'm forcing the issue. But, you know, if you're in a hiring position, also to talk about how you protect people. Talk about what services you will offer to people who are, just in case Twitter does come for them, just in case Reddit does come for them. Make that a point of pride and actually sell yourself on it to talent and to potential hires, because that will help make it a thing that people think about and that other people want to compete with you in providing similar protections. Patrick, you were laughing.
I was laughing because I was I got a text from sort of a high-level game designer today about the labor piece, and they appreciated it and were laughing at some of the really clumsy responses that we got from some developers.
You want to set this piece up a little bit for people who haven't read it yet?
Yeah, we posted a piece today where for a huge amount of the interviews that we did at E3, we had everyone on the staff ask some sort of a question related to labor or unionization, just to kind of like get people on the record and ask folks as high as, you know, Reggie Fils-Aimé at Nintendo to, you know, a small, like, you know, basically one-man team and try to get a different scope of people on the record about their thoughts. And there's a couple of really good, like, thoughtful, interesting answers. A lot of them are, like, skirting around saying anything, and a lot of them are, like, PR people glancing nervously around hoping that the person won't step in it in some way. But a lot of the answers are, like, revealing for how, like, unrehearsed they are.
Yeah.
Like, they're clearly someone, like, fumbling through – like, they're starting an answer and then immediately looking for the exit because they don't – like, developers, like, usually are, like – media trained before they go to an event, which is like, here are the questions we expect you're going to get asked, so you can at least think about, like, what are both to fit in the talking points of, like, what they're pushing on the game, and also just so you don't get caught flat-footed. And so the developer I was talking to was just sort of chuckling at, like, how poorly, like, some of the responses were, given how sort of, like, on message folks usually are about, like, everything related to their game. And I said, well, yeah, like, I'll actually consider it to be an improvement if we ask all those same people, or another round of questions next year, we just did the same exact sort of topic. If I got canned PR responses, I would consider that to actually be some sort of meaningful improvement, because it meant they were forced to talk about
100%.
It and come up with a message, right? Like, so, like, what I'm saying is, like, oh, I'll get worse answers. But, like, actually, it means in some way we, like, pushed the needle in a direction, which is to say, oh, this is important enough that people might ask, we need to have a discussion to give, like, a bullshit response. And a bullshit response at least means internally they talked about it and what should our message be, even if that doesn't necessarily change the labor practices for, like, individual employees. It puts the message out there in a way that is rhetorically and, I think, like, actually literally useful, both us as critics and observers and also for, like, workers and employers.
Yeah.
So.
I think we'll hear. I think you're right. I think we'll hear much more rehearsed answers on this next year, and I hopefully we will be in a place to continue to push them on that stuff and dig deeper. The same way, I think we'll hear a lot of rehearsed answers on the politics question next year too. I don't think anyone is going to be as flat-footed as the Division II was this year. We'll see, but. All right. No dip in the question bucket today. We've already gone over in our time. So thank you, everyone, for listening today to this episode of Waypoint Radio. As always, thank yous to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. You can follow us, twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice, youtube.com/waypointvice, and Twitter and twitch.tv/waypoint.
Are we skipping waypoints?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Give me some waypoints. You're right. I forgot about waypoints. Sounds like you have a waypoint.
Oh, I was. Mine is sort of like tangentially related to all this, which is that Star Wars: The Last Jedi has been a source of lots of interesting takes on that movie. But actually, it's been super fascinating. If you don't follow the writer director of The Last Jedi, whatever you thought of that movie on Twitter, he has one of those fascinating Twitter accounts in Hollywood right now, or just sort of like in a like public facing creative medium. I don't know. I can't think of any other creator, especially one that's been at the center of like a controversial storm that The Last Jedi has been among certain shitty parts of the Star Wars fan base, who actually sits and engages in replies, talks to these people, shits on these people, like isn't just like, you know, fun about it, like, oh, you know, haha, like actually like rhetorically dismantles people's awful arguments, whether they're related to his movie or the, you know, the harassment of the actors that were, you know, participated in that movie. And specifically, he today there is a tweet where he references how shocked he is that more people don't know what Gamergate was, and how much of that is a framework for what happens both with The Last Jedi and other sort of harassment campaigns. And so I would specifically point you to finding that tweet and then reading some of the replies to it. And just seeing how similar a lot of this stuff really is, like how easily radicalized all sorts of people were and how radicalization happens in sort of like toxic fandoms.
Right.
And to watch a creator actually – like the thing we're asking more developers to do that are in positions of power and authority to like set a tone for like – for these sorts of things. Like Rian Johnson is out there doing that for Star Wars and his movie, and I think it's really commendable. I think he's put up with a lot of undue shit for it from a lot of shitty folks out there. But like, I've been happy to watch him kind of take that fight to the front lines in a way that a lot of other creators just sort of walk away from.
Yeah. Other waypoints.
PK Dix, Electric Dreams.
I saw you tweeting about this.
Yeah, it's really.
It's been on my list.
It's an anthology series. PK Dix, Electric Dreams.
I just heard PK Dix and I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
PK Dix, Electric Energy.
That's what they call me.
It's really good. It's a really good show. It's an anthology series.
Because his name is Patrick Klepek.
His name is Patrick Klepek. Yeah, so PK is anthology. PK.
Thank you. Someone.
I got you, PK Dix. I understand.
Oh, my God.
If you were Private Eye, you would literally be PK Dix.
True.
You might need a career change. I'm just saying. It's a really good series. At least the episodes I've seen. I've seen about three or four episodes. It's very, you know, we're in the era of Black Mirror, where anthology sci-fi series are coming back to some degree, at least a tiny, tiny little bit. I really like it. It's all sort of adaptations based on PK Dix stories. There's an episode that is really lovely about a really cool cyberpunk lesbian cop and her very Total Recall-ish other life slash maybe it's a dream, maybe it's not. There's a really great one about sort of Facebook and social media and high school kids. There's just a lot of really good, interesting episodes. They're not all on the same level, but I really, really enjoying sort of dipping in. So that's my waypoint.
Awesome. Rob Zachney.
Well, boy, I already did Skybound, so I guess...
Skyfall.
I was really sick for a week, so I actually didn't really like. You want to hear about how much I like Billions? I like Billions a lot. And I can't. That may be a slightly indefensible statement, and yet here I am, Mr. I Love Billions guy. You know, there comes a time in your life when you must put away childish things and bury your DVD copies of Entourage. And that's Billions is right there for you, being like, do you watch douchebags, like, having lots of political drama, but nothing really ever changes? Boom. Billions. But what I will say is the second and third seasons, it actually does go from being a really kind of stupid and slightly scuzzy show to being a really good one about, like, mentorship and power and responsibility and what it is like to what it is like both as a mentor and a mentee to realize that your ways have diverged and you're sort of seeing through each other's bullshit a little bit. And in the third season, there are a lot of, like, chickens that come home to roost it is really satisfying to see how it all comes together. And in particular, like, a lot of it centers on, like, literally Billions becomes a good character because of one character, Taylor, who's, like, this genius, like, this, like, trading savant. And they're non-binary, and they're played by a non-binary actor, Asia Kate Dillon. And at first, this character does not appear to be as major as they end up being. But the third season is entirely about the dynamic between Taylor as a mentor to Damian Lewis's Bobby Axelrod, who's a very old-school, like, finance bro, and the different approaches they have toward work, life, their relationships with their coworkers and employees, and what happens when, like, Axelrod realizes that Taylor is no longer this blank slate that he can, like, sort of project himself onto and sort of mold, that they have their own ideas for where the company and where the business should go, and what happens when those differences become, like, you know, unsolvable, unbridgeable. So it actually does end up being a really good show, almost. Like, it creeps up on you. Like, at first, it's kind of like a almost Riverdale-esque, like, this is great, this is wild.
I'm listening.
What a roller coaster this is. And then you're like, wait, this is good.
When did this get good?
Rob, I finished Riverdale.
It's good.
It gets really good. There's a dip in season two.
I think there's two dips and two real high points.
Real high points. The episode that takes place over a long night, the long night of Riverdale.
The triptych.
No, that one's good too. No. That's a great one. But also just like the second to last episode.
Oh, the
where
riot.
Everything just the riot. I was trying to avoid the spoiler of saying the riot.
Oh, right. But we learned in the first season that there's been multiple riots in Riverdale history.
Oh, that's
which is
true.
Weird for them to retcon that in.
Which is weird. Like, which is weird. Yeah. But we should find a space to talk more Riverdale.
Waypoint 101. Hell yeah.
Maybe
all right.
Do
you heard
it.
Here
maybe
first.
We do it.
Into
maybe
it.
We do it. One, I already did Six Ages as my real waypoint, but real quick, if you just want to get super mad, you, like me, should finally get around to watching Making a Murderer on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
God damn.
Yeah.
It is
evil geniuses.
I watched it. I think I'm madder about Making a Murderer.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Well, 100%. Yeah.
Oh, do you know the pitch on Making a Murderer?
Well, as I heard, it was a really flawed documentary that makes a guy who, like, the version I heard is that there's a lot of evidence to suggest this motherfucker did bad things, and Netflix is
I believe
there
it.
Doing
and I think that story did not do a great job of presenting the so guy goes to jail for 18 years for a sexual assault case, attempted murder case, and then was fully exonerated in like 2003 via DNA evidence. And then a couple years later, he gets arrested, like in the middle of a case that he's bringing against the kind of sheriff's department there, that county sheriff's department. He gets brought in, arrested on charges of a brutal crime to a woman named Teresa Halbach. And like a lot of true crime stuff, it does not do the best job of treating Teresa Halbach as a full person.
Right.
And we don't know any – I don't know anything. I watched 10 hours of that show. I couldn't tell you the first thing about Teresa Halbach except that she has what I think is a very – naive brother. That's the kind of it.
That's
right?
About it.
But and I of course it's a documentary, which means like any other thing a human has produced, it has its biases and it has its perspectives. I do not doubt at all that there is a lot of information that was cut from this. But the information that is presented, and just judging on the information that is positively presented in terms of like who the police investigated as potential killers in this second case, who they failed to investigate, what some of their procedures were like in terms of testing evidence and keeping perhaps the sheriff's department who would have a conflict of interest out of the picture in this investigation.
And every single thing the prosecutor does.
Everything. That fucking prosecutor.
Every second of everything he does
it's just
– yeah.
It's one of those things that's like – there's part of me that's like, oh, yeah, you want to know why people like me don't trust the cops? Look over here. Watch this show. There is. It is worth watching just to see, you know, again, going critically, as Rob said, there's absolutely plenty of stuff that I'm sure was left out here. But it was one of those documentaries that was like 10 episodes. How the fuck could they get 10 episodes out of this?
Oh, yeah.
I left it going like, I need another five.
Yep.
There's more I need to know. Let me just show me all the case. Let me see all 500 hours of this.
They're working on a follow up. So
yeah, it's messy, but it was a better watch than I anticipated. So I enjoyed it.
Staircase is supposed to be.
I've heard that. We'll see.
I've not gotten around to that one, but it's on my list.
Yeah. All right. I think it's gonna do it for us. Finally, we're out of here. Danielle, what do we say to him?
Be good. And be good at it and treat people like human beings.
Treat them like human beings. That's not a big... Just treat them like human beings. Peace.
Do it for the fans.
Passionate fans.
Do it for the fans of human beings.
Yeah.
Like us.
Be a human being fan. Have passion for them. And
be
good
at it. Yeah. Peace.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.